Atheists deny God exists. Agnostics declare it can't be known. Most who accept God's existence also believe there is no proof of it. This is part 2 of 5 covering proof that God exists. His existence need not be taken on faith. Many just do not realize that science conclusively proves the existence of God. Any true God would never leave his creation, mankind, in doubt about whether he exists. Despite widespread controversy, you can know with absolute certainty that an all-intelligent mind created the universe and all life on Earth. Part 1 brought evidence from astronomy, biology, chemistry, and mathematics. Now comes even more stunning, yet largely little-known, proofs. Some lengthy quotes will appear, but they are all worth the time taken because after completing this series, your belief in God will stand on bedrock.
The World to Come. The Restored Church of God presents David C. Pack, author of 80 books and booklets, editor-in-chief of The Real Truth magazine, read by countless and growing numbers in every nation and territory of the world. In a violent age, full of bad news, answering life's greatest questions straight from the Bible and announcing the wonderful good news of the world to come. And now, David C. Pack.
We pick up where we left off with the concept of irreducible complexity. Recall that Charles Darwin himself wrote in The Origin of Species, "If it could be demonstrated that any complex organ existed which could not possibly have been formed by numerous, successive, slight modifications, my theory would absolutely break down." You will see that Darwin would today say his theory has failed. Utterly. Its many breakdowns mean it cannot be true. He would say this. Sadly, he's not here to tell us to drop his theory, that it's false. If only people would believe Charles Darwin's own rules governing his ideas, no one would believe evolution. Back from the grave, he would be the first to disown the theory of evolution. We start with an example of molecular machines to better appreciate the complexity of cells. Japanese and German scientists have now discovered the smallest of nature's machines called tiny engines. Advanced research on these remarkable super small engines of life begs the question, where did they come from? A group of Japanese scientists exploring the crystal structure of F1 ATPase enzyme discovered nature's own rotary engine, no bigger than 10 billionths by 10 billionths by 8 billionths of a meter. The tiny motor includes the equivalent of an engine block, drive shaft, and 3 pistons. It runs at speeds between 1/2 and 4 revolutions per second. This motor not only ranks as the smallest ever seen, it also represents the smallest motor that the laws of physics and chemistry will allow. In Germany, a research team used new instruments to examine an enormous molecule, the yeast 26S proteasome. Though not the largest molecule in existence, this one contains over 2 million protons and neutrons and is the largest non-symmetrical molecule mapped to date. This molecule can only be described as a wonder. It serves as an intracellular waste disposal and recycling system. Recognize such an organism could never have evolved gradually. This is literally impossible. Now, another amazing quote about a single, truly incredible organism. It is necessarily long to illustrate the complexity of just one molecular machine. This fascinating understanding about your body is more than worth the time taken to read it. In many biological structures, proteins are simply components of larger molecular machines. Like the picture tube, wires, metal bolts, and screws that comprise a television, many proteins are part of structures that only function when virtually all of the components have been assembled. A good example of this is a cilium. Cilia are hair-like organelles on the surfaces of many animal and lower plant cells that serve to move fluid over the cell's surface or to row single cells through a fluid. In humans, for example, epithelial cells lining the respiratory tract each have about 200 cilia that beat in synchrony to sweep mucus towards the throat for elimination. Already amazing, we're just warming up. A cilium consists of a membrane-coated bundle of fibers called an axoneme. An axoneme contains a ring of 9 double microtubules surrounding 2 central single microtubules. Each outer doublet consists of a ring of 13 filaments, subfiber A, fused to an assembly of 10 filaments, subfiber B. The filaments of the microtubules are composed of 2 proteins called alpha and beta tubulin. The 11 microtubules forming an axoneme are held together by 3 types of connectors. Subfibers A are joined to the central microtubules by radial spokes. Adjacent outer doublets are joined by linkers that consist of a highly elastic protein called nexin, and the central microtubules are joined by a connecting bridge. Finally, every subfiber A bears 2 arms, an inner arm and an outer arm, both containing the protein dynein. But how does a cilium work? The fascination grows greater. Experiments have indicated that the ciliary motion results from the chemically powered walking of the dynein arms on one microtubule up the neighboring subfiber B of a second microtubule so that the 2 microtubules slide past each other. However, the protein cross-links between microtubules in an intact cilium prevent neighboring microtubules from sliding past each other by more than a short distance. These crosslinks convert the dynein-induced sliding motion to a bending motion of the entire axoneme. Now let us sit back, review the workings of the cilium, and consider what it implies. Cilia are composed of at least a half dozen proteins: alpha tubulin, beta tubulin, dynein, nexin, spoke protein, and a central bridge protein. These combine to perform one task: ciliary motion, and all of these proteins must be present for the cilium to function. If the tubulins are absent, then there are no filaments to slide. If the dynein is missing, then the cilium remains rigid and motionless. If nexin or the other connecting proteins are missing, then the axoneme falls apart when the filaments slide. What we see in the cilium, then, is not just profound complexity, but also irreducible complexity on the molecular scale. This was terribly complicated, but that's the point. All of this evolved by blind, dumb luck? On this alone, no wonder God declares, "The fool has said there is no God." But should not even fools doubt this could happen? Organisms are all complicated, some wonderfully so, and yet they cannot be reduced, diminished, or simplified in complexity. They had to come into being exactly as they are, because they never could have arrived at their present condition gradually. We should stand in awe of any God great enough just to design and create cilia. Let's now journey deep into the cells of all living organisms. This will be unlike any trip you have ever taken. There appears a world of such exquisite detail, design, complexity, interdependence, and specificity as to boggle the mind. Let's start painting. A brief discussion of proteins and sequencing is necessary. To form a protein, amino acids must link together to form a chain. Amino acids form functioning proteins only when they adopt very specific sequential arrangements, like properly sequenced letters in an English sentence. Thus, amino acids alone do not make proteins any more than letters alone make poetry. In both cases, the sequencing of the constituent parts determines the function of the whole. Explaining the origin of the specific sequencing of proteins and DNA lies at the heart of the current crisis in materialistic evolutionary thinking. Proteins must appear in exact sequences to cause specific chemical reactions or build specific structures within the cells. This action is called specificity. It is because of specificity that proteins cannot substitute for one another. They are as different in purpose as an axe, drill, hammer, or screwdriver. Let's summarize the enormous difficulty of believing DNA happened by chance. The complexity and intricacy of the DNA molecule, combined with the staggering amount of chemically coded information it contains, speaks unerringly to the fact that this super molecule simply could not have happened by blind chance. It is not possible for a code of any kind to arise by chance or accident. A code is the work of an intelligent mind. Even the cleverest dog or chimpanzee could not work out a code of any kind. It is obvious, then, that chance cannot do it. This could no more have been the work of chance or accident than could the Moonlight Sonata be played by mice running up and down the keyboard of my piano. Codes do not arise from chaos. Now another source. Atheist Richard Dawkins has admitted, "The more statistically improbable a thing is, the less we can believe it just happened by blind chance. Superficially, the obvious alternative to chance is an intelligent designer." The source book later states, "That is the very point the theist is stressing. An intelligent designer is demanded by the available evidence." The famous Dr. Carl Sagan wrote about DNA. "The information content of a simple cell has been estimated as around 10 to the 12th power, or 1 trillion bits. He put this number into perspective. That if one were to count every letter of every word of every book in the world's largest library, over 10 million volumes, the final tally would be approximately a trillion letters. Thus, a single cell contains the equivalent information content of more than 10 million volumes. Nothing works unless everything works at the same time. DNA could not have gradually come into existence. Special creation is required for DNA to exist. Where did all life on earth come from? How did it get here? The Bible declares that God created all living things during the first 6 days of the creation week. Is this true, or did life appear by itself? As with uranium-238 in its provable moment of beginning, the great pattern of all life is that it can only come from pre-existing life. This is called the law of biogenesis. Every first-year biology student knows it. When examining tiny organisms like protozoa and bacteria, it can be demonstrated that life only comes from life. There are many kinds of life, but each continues to reproduce the same kind over and over. This is indisputable. Life can never come from non-living objects. Biologists know that all cells can only come from pre-existing cells. Evolutionists theorize that inanimate objects, under certain unknown circumstances in the misty past, as they like to assert, somehow spontaneously gave birth to primitive life forms. But this presents enormous problems for anyone familiar with the nature and complexity of simple cells. Even the most rudimentary cells are extremely complex. The simplest organism capable of independent life, the prokaryote bacterial cell, is a masterpiece of miniaturized complexity which makes a spaceship seem rather low-tech. Here's another source. The cell needs all its basic parts with their various functions for survival. Therefore, if the cell had evolved, it would have meant that billions of parts would have had to come into existence at the same time, in the same place, and then simultaneously come together in a precise order. Skeptics ignore the truth that it is impossible to have life without a life giver. Only God has life inherent in himself. This is what makes him God. No one created God. But is he merely a blind power, a dumb first force? Just complexity screams no. The first law of thermodynamics points to a creator's eternal existence. Remember, this law says something cannot come from nothing. Thus, a creator had to always exist. Science has effectively proven that if there were not an eternal God being to create the universe, there could never have been a universe. Since a cause must be greater than the effect, a maker, an all-powerful God, had to exist through eternity to effect the creation. Science has unwittingly demonstrated God's existence while simultaneously debunking evolution. A Nobel Prize-winning physicist stated, "The progress of science, no matter how marvelous it appears to be, leads to dead ends and shows our final ineptitude at producing a rational explanation of the universe." Let's add, and also a rational explanation for plants, animals, and human beings. Instead of looking for the truth of creation, science has chosen confusion, suppositions, and deceit. Ignoring the evidence, evolutionists and others are forced to conjure illusions, which should be getting easier to see for what they are. But why would highly intelligent men believe such false and silly ideas and even willingly deceive people into doing the same? Get this. They do not want a God telling them what to do. They cannot have that. In their world, God must not exist. They want you to agree because, like misery, darkness also loves company. Christ's listeners saw he spoke with authority. So do I. Speaking truth with facts allows this. And we do this on all subjects of plain Bible truth. Stop and think of all the works of nature around you, on earth and in the heavens. First, consider the many kinds of planets, stars, and galaxies. Each is its own marvel. Second, consider all species of plants on earth. There are millions, diverse in color, shape, size, beauty, and length of life. I've spent much of my life studying and working with many kinds of plants. The brilliance of their varying designs and purposes never ceases to amaze me. A side note should be considered. All existing food on earth is perfectly designed for human or animal consumption. It is constructed to contain just the right amounts of differing elements necessary to sustain various life forms. Every time man tries to improve or alters food, he pollutes, ruins, devitalizes, injects with poison, genetically re-engineers, or in some manner reduces its perfection into something inferior to what he started with. If mankind would just leave food alone and eat it as God created, sickness, disease, and every form of nutrition-related infirmity would disappear. The germination, growth, development, and maturation of plants into the many kinds of food available just to human beings represents its own series of miracles far too complex to recount here. It would command its own book just to explore beyond the most superficial overview. Now think hard. Who is more intelligent? God, who made perfect food, or men, who find every possible way to alter and degrade it before consuming it? Third, consider the over 1 million different kinds of animals, plus the estimated 12 million kinds of insects. Because these creatures are animate, they are even more marvelous and fascinating than our plants. But their diversity in color, shape, size, beauty, and lifespan is much like plants. The point? As fascinating, marvelous, beautiful, and amazing as are all the things described here, nothing is as amazing as the human mind. It is the absolute pinnacle of all living organisms. None can doubt this. Think of what man has been able to produce. He can build houses, make smartphones, trains, automobiles, planes, rockets, computers, and other sophisticated devices that are almost limitless in complexity and usefulness. Yet man's creative genius has a limit. No man or group of men can create anything as marvelous as the human mind. Everything man creates is inferior to his own mind. Try thinking of one thing that has ever been created by men that is superior to the minds who created it. You will fail. Here is the question. Who or what created your mind and you? King David stated, "I am fearfully and wonderfully made." Surely this is most true of the human brain. Be honest. Can you possibly believe some kind of blind, dumb power or force of no intelligence way below that of men created your mind? Remember, you can create nothing superior to your mind. So only a greater mind could create your mind. Don't insult yourself. Don't suggest your extraordinary creative powers of intelligence, reason, logic, thought, volition, and ingenuity are a product of dumb luck. Take time to read our free eye-opening booklet, What Science Will Never Discover About Your Mind. And also request another, Does God Exist? Evolutionists once referred more often to evidence from the fossil record. Does such evidence exist? Do bones and artifacts from millions of years ago tell a story, offer convincing proof that man evolved from simple organisms? What says the scientific record? Remember, we want facts, proof, not theories requiring faith to believe them. In the 1920s, a single tooth was found in western Nebraska at Snake Creek Quarry. Scientists offered this tooth as proof evolution had occurred and purported it to be a missing link. Because of where it was found, the human-like sketch drawn around it was called Nebraska Man. Much to-do was made of this discovery. It was big news. Evolutionists rejoiced. But a funny thing happened on the way to proof of evolution. 5 years later, someone decided to ask a farmer his opinion of the tooth. His answer? It's a pig's tooth. More excavation at the site proved the rest of the skeleton was indeed a pig. It is often bones or just bone fragments, many of which have been determined to be hoaxes, that cause evolutionists to assert that important links from the fossil record have been found. Merely because someone found a piece of bone, sophisticated artist renderings are presented, given names, and offered as convincing visual proof that evolution occurred. Poppycock! Orseman was based on what turned out to be the skull cap of a donkey. Ramapithecus Man was simply a baboon skull. Piltdown Man was an outright hoax, and Neanderthal Man was later determined to be severely bow-legged because he had rickets. He was not proof from the fossil record of a half-ape, half-man transitional creature. There is a certain desperation in the thinking and actions of many evolutionary scientists. The next quotes demonstrate their approach. A 5-million-year-old piece of bone that was thought to be the collarbone of a human-like creature is actually part of a dolphin rib. Anthropologist Dr. Tim White stated, "The problem with a lot of anthropologists is that they want so much to find a hominid, human, that any scrap of bone becomes a hominid bone." This comes from a professor of physics. In fact, evolution became, in a sense, a scientific religion. Almost all scientists have accepted it, and many are prepared to bend their observations to fit in with it. Let's summarize. No transitional forms exist anywhere in the fossil record. While evolutionists will suggest it took 50 million years for a fish to evolve into an amphibian, the simple truth is there are no transitional fossils to prove it. There are no creatures found that evidence partial fins, partial feet, or partially evolved brains, legs, eyes, organs, or other body parts. Even Darwin, the father of evolution, admitted, "Why, if species have descended from other species by insensibly fine gradations, do we not everywhere see innumerable transitional forms? Why is not all nature in confusion instead of the species being, as we see them, well defined?" This is an example of why Darwin would himself say his theory is false and why he would be the first to disown it in light of what science has learned. Let's see how bone fragments are supposed to represent entire human skeletons within various stages of the fossil record. Dr. Richard Leakey, considered the most famous fossil anthropologist in the world, said the skull of his famous discovery, Lucy, is so incomplete that it is mostly imagination made of plaster of Paris. He admitted no firm conclusions could be made about what species she was, even though she was assigned the age of 3.5 to 4 million years old. I have personally seen a photograph of her supposed skeleton, and it's meaningless. The front cover of a well-known national news magazine showed a picture of an ape's head in an article titled, "How Apes Became Human." The article was an outright pitiful attempt to connect a toe bone to other bones found 10 miles away and then to depict them as proof of evolution. Of course, the article speaks of evolution as a foregone conclusion. It was filled with uncertain phrases, however, like close to answering what appears to be, people have speculated, we are suggesting, still something of a mystery. Probably, about, presumably, and maybe. These phrases are endless, yet mere artwork and diagrams make the flimsy speculative evidence look like absolute proof. The reader is left with the impression the writers were themselves uncertain and uncomfortable. Mixed with baseless assumptions, the artwork lends credibility through sensationalism, giving it saleability. In the end, it was false advertising in blatant form. Grasp this. There are no links from plants to animals, reptiles to birds and mammals, etc. The fossil record shows that animals appear suddenly. When this was recognized, the whole theory of microevolution collapsed, and evolutionists admitted as much. They then decided that possibly the fossil record could best be described as indicating macroevolution, sometimes referred to as punctuated equilibrium or the hopeful monster theory. This ludicrous idea suggests a reptile could suddenly lay an egg that would hatch a bird. Of course, since this would be a miracle, it would require God to perform it. But evolutionists can't have that. So evolutionists should probably best be thought of as believing in godless miracles. Now that's a religion worth avoiding. If I sound like I'm mocking them, it's because I am. Any who mock God's existence surely believe we should at least have license to mock them. Their teaching is a disgrace and they embarrass themselves saying they believe it. Don't you believe them. So many are willing to fall for ridiculous ideas because they've been told them throughout their lives, such as evolution is a fact. They then assume it cannot be wrong if everyone believes it. One source admitted that living things are suited for their environment better explains the fact that they were created for it, not that they evolved into it. After all is said and done, the fossil record has never revealed what evolutionists hoped for. It gives distinct evidence of one fact, sudden special creation of all life in a fully formed condition. To believe anything else is to be dishonest with the evidence. Part 3 reveals many more proofs of God's existence. Don't miss it. Until next time, this is David C. Pack saying goodbye, friends.
This program was made available by Restored Church of God members and donors from around the globe. Explore our vast library of literature and other World to Come programs, which are all made available free of charge. To order literature featured in this program, call toll-free 1-855-828-4646. That number again, 1-855-828-4646.